Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Sunbury Motors, Sunbury Motors, Sunbury, Pennsylvania, Sunbury Motors Kia in Hummel's Wharf. Visit the Quick Lane and the service shop in Sunbury for all your service needs. Steve is not here today, or here at the start today, because he's at still at shoot around out at Rutgers, where he's on remote today. Penn State is at Rutgers tonight in men's basketball. That game will start on at 8 p.m. pregame here on News Radio 1070 AM. Going to talk a little bit about what we talked about at the end of the day yesterday when Steve brought up Gino Auriemma's article about youth sports, and you know, we were pushing up against the end of the show, and I really didn't get the say what I had thought. It is interesting to me. I did mention a little bit that, you know, how much there's not Little League around here after the age of 12. The Little League World Series kind of keeps kids involved in Little League baseball at least until 12. That chance to Williamsport still looms large for kids. One of my big things to cover in the summertime back when I started back in the 90s and during the between 2000 and 2010 was a lot of Legion baseball all summer, and that's kind of gone to the wayside, especially in our area. There's not as many teams, and a lot of this stuff is kids are playing ASA or AAU basketball or things like that and not participating in the Legion anymore. And you know, it's kind of a shame. You know, Steve talked about what Gino said a little bit. It seems that, you know, I think that the push to get college scholarships it feeds into this as well. That, you know, everybody's kid at the age of 12 is going to be a Division I athlete. I think a lot of parents think, and you know, as somebody that's been around sports a long time, you realize that is not true, especially around in this area. I mean, you know, I mean, Mason Ordonez, the Lewisburg swimmer, you know, he's going to LaSalle to swim. It's not an easy path to get to Division I, even a small Division I school. You know, I'm not even talking a Power Five school. It's tough to be an athlete, that's able to participate at even Bucknell, which, you know, most people, you know, realizes a Division I school, but not like, you know, like Penn State or UCLA or someplace like that. And that's super tough, you know, to be athletically gifted enough to play basketball even at Bucknell. I mean, look at the locals. The three off the top of my head in my 30 years are Colin Claibon from Southern Columbia, Brent Guthrie from Warrior Run from back when I played in the early 90s, and Chris Zimmerman, who didn't see a lot of court time, ended up being hurt and playing at Susquehanna of Shamokin. So I think it's this pursuit of college scholarships. It allows the parents to be closer, which isn't necessarily a good thing. I don't deal with it as much in my job as you would think. I think you'd be surprised about, you know, mellow might not be the right word, but we usually have a pretty good group of parents around here. There's not usually a lot of coaching controversy. You know, I can think of one or two over the last 10 years that maybe the parents pushed for somebody to get pushed out somewhere. But, you know, I think that's just something that's kind of infecting our youth sports and our high school sports right now. Is, you know, we're never going to see somebody like Jim Roth or Joe Paterno, I think, you know, in high school and even in college sports, with just the intensity surrounding the games. You know, the off season never ends. Derek Hicks at Selinsgrove, you know, resigned last week as football coach at Selins Grove. And one of the things that we had talked about was just how much time is involved being a high school football, high school basketball, you know, almost any kind of high school coach right now. It's almost year round. You know, besides a season, you know, look at football. You know, you're expected to be in the weight room at most of the time, 3 days a week, to watch, make sure the kids are getting in there working out. As we get into the spring, you get a chance. You know, you have to go to 7-on-7 camps, which isn't something that existed 15 years ago when some of these guys started. You have to be available most weekends. You know, I don't know if I gave the example on this show. I wrote it in my column about it last week. Selins Grove made the state semifinals in baseball and played in a semifinal on a Thursday. And Coach Hicks and his son Caleb, Tucker Teets, some of the football players are on the baseball team as well. And, you know, their baseball season ended on Thursday, and they were prepping for a 7-on-7 the very next Saturday out of you know, Midwest to start the football season in June. So, you know, I think that's part of it as well. It's just, you know, there's so much expectations in what goes on in youth sports from everybody but the kids at this point. You know, I the kids want to go out and play sports. The kids just want to play, you know. And Steve touched on, you know, Coach Ariyama said something to the effect of, you know, kids want to play games and don't want to practice because that's where the hard work is. And, you know, kids these days learn differently. I think most of us realize that, you know, we didn't have to deal with tablets, cell phones, none of the electronics that are available to younger people these days. I mean, I can't say anything. I'm pretty addicted to my phone too. I it's probably something I should do a little better on, but you know, people are more visual learners these days, and some, you know, I think coaches are going to have to adjust. And some kinds of, you know, we talked to John Griffin a lot on here, you know, on Mondays about kind of what he does for, you know, we're talking about younger kids, we're talking college kids learn the same, you know, kind of learn the same way. And he uses his video and you know, his background in video to teach, you know, to teach visually. It's easier for him to teach them visually than it is maybe to, you know, to set up a drill in practice and go through it painstakingly step by step, because, you know, that's how they did it when he played. That's how they did it when I played, and I just don't think kids learn that way. So, you know, it's an adjustment for coaches as well. You know, I've kind of rambled on here. It's some other parts of that is, you know, we talked a little bit about the parents, and this is more high school than it is youth right now. But you can Google right now, there's three different high schools in the state of Pennsylvania in the last 7 days that have gotten rid of their boys' basketball coaches in the middle of the season. You know, one of which was Bishop Canavan out in the WPIAL, whose team is 8-0 in the section and has a real good shot to be one of the top seeds in the Class A playoffs out there. And it's, you know, each firing has its own set of circumstances. Like the Canavan coach threw a water bottle, you know, during a timeout 2 weeks ago. But, you know, in the story that I read, that he thought it was past that. He had served a suspension, and they were asked on, I believe, Monday not to come back. You know, and Palisades was, you know, Palmerton had been successful, and, you know, once you're not successful, if you're one of kind of an old school coach these days, that's not an approach that works when you're not winning. And I think, you know, when I read the story, the Palmerton coach had turned the team around, had them to the playoffs a couple years in a row, first state playoff appearance in 25 years or something like that, really involved in the program. But once, you know, he had a struggle a little bit last year, and I think they're 500 this year, and that's a chance for excuse me, for a chance for people to kind of attack you from the outside and take advantage of that. And that's, you know, there's a conversation to be had that parent complaints go right to the school board, and it's I don't want to say there shouldn't be weight put on parent complaints, because I think we've all been around enough to know that some of them are perfectly legitimate, and we've read all the stories. But sometimes, you know, it's a personality conflict between the kid and the coach, or a personality conflict between the parent and the coach. Somebody thinks they should play more. You know, it's not something. I think people think that varsity sports sometimes, if coaches don't win, they get in trouble. They're expected to win. But if they don't play the right people sometimes and win, you know, they don't win the right way, and they're still having problems. And that's something that we're going to have to figure out as a society, because, you know, I'll tell this story. You know, Jim Ross, one win away from 500 wins when we start the high school football season in the fall. You know, and even he has had a kid move away and transfer to another district because a father didn't believe that Jim Roth knew what he was doing. So, you know, it happens to everybody. You know, I think I can't remember who the major league manager is that made this joke back, you know, way back in the day. But one of the keys is to keep the one-third of the team that doesn't like you away from the two-thirds of the team that does. And sometimes I don't wonder if that's half of a high school coach's job, is to kind of keep the peace between some of the kids that think they should play and some of the kids that do play. You know, I don't know. I don't have any hard answers for any of this. It you know, life would be much simpler if there was some easy answers to this stuff. You know, it's something we're going to have to solve. I mean, right now my daughter's 8 years old and involved in AYSO, and one of the toughest things that people now are finding volunteers for some of these youth sports. You know, that they're looking in Sealands Grove for AYSO. I mean, they're looking most places. You know, even, you know, we had some tough times with the youth basketball stuff this fall. There's just, you know, there's some, you know, there's sociological things involved in this. I think we're more fragmented in the sense of, you know, there's more options. You know, there's not just sports. There's a plethora of dance classes that probably weren't quite as available as they were when I was a kid. There's a whole bunch of other things that kids can do these days. And, you know, sometimes, you know, sports goes by the wayside, and that, you know, if you're not interested, I get it. But, you know, some of the stuff that builds from you sports, even if you end up not playing in high school, certainly helps you in, you know, in building relationships and, you know, how to exist. You know, if you play in a team with 12 people, there is a guarantee that there's probably one or two teammates that you're not particularly fond of, and you learn how to deal with that stuff. You learn how to work with people you know that might not be your favorite people for a common goal, and that's you know, as you find out as an adult, that can be pretty darn important. So you know, I guess kind of to wrap up my point here is, you know, there's a lot of issues at stake here, and I think there's some discussions to be had. I think, you know, I think some of these high schools should probably, you know, maybe get more involved youth-wise. You know, maybe the kids can coach a little bit. Maybe the kids can ref a little bit. As, you know, it's a way for them to learn the game as well. I think, you know, part of the problem with you know, like Steve said yesterday, and we were talking about this, when you don't practice these games, you kind of, you know, you don't learn the nuances. You know, you understand that the ball goes, you know, the ball goes into the basket, but you don't really understand how to slip a screen or when to set the screen and maybe not set the screen or things along those natures. When to play help defense and maybe kind of let your guy out to dry because maybe you have the more important player, things like that. So we're going to take our first break here. We'll be back in a few minutes here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 AM. Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors in Sunbury Motors Ford in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia in Hummel's Wharf. Steve's still not back from shoot around yet at Rutgers. Penn State takes on the Scarlet Knights tonight at 8:30. Steve and Dick will be on the air here on 1070 AM, News Radio 1070 AM at 8 o'clock. Talked a little bit about the negatives in youth in high school sports. Let's talk a little positives tonight or today. looks like the Heartland Athletic Conference division races are heating up, I guess would be the best way to put it. Selins Grove went into Shamokin last night and beat them 70-54. So now Shamokin and Selins Grove are each tied with one loss in the league. The Indians have two games with a game with Milton and a game with Jersey Shore. Yet Selins Grove has three games yet. They go at the Central Mountain. I believe they host Milton tonight, and then they still have a game with Jersey Shore next week. Danville beat Central Columbia last night, and Mifflinburg was able to knock off Montoursville. That gives Danville the lead in Division II all by themselves, one game ahead of Montoursville. And it looks like Loyal Sock wrapped up Division III last night, beating Mount Carmel at home. I think the Lancers are 17-1 now overall. Ron Insiker doing another great job up in the Williamsport area, and that should make for quite an interesting Heartland Athletic Conference tournament at the end of next week on the boys' side, with Selins Grove, Danville, and Loyal Sock right now looking to be the three. Selins Grove, Shamokin, Danville, and Loyal Sock are the division leaders right now. I think they still go to overall Heartland record to determine the fourth team. So I don't know if Shamokin's only loss in the overall hack is to Selins Grove. No, now that I'm thinking about it, they did lose to Loyal Sock in overtime back in December. So, you know, Shamokin does have two Pennsylvania Heartland Conference losses. So they probably do have that wild card wrapped up if they win out and claim a tie in that division with Selins Grove. Wrestling wise, the PI or the District 4 Class 2A tournament starts tonight with the I guess it's the round of 16. I guess the quarterfinals will be Saturday at Milton, quarters, semis, and finals. Warrior Run, your top seed there. They get a bye. I think the two seed has a bye as well. Mifflinburg's down at Line Mountain, and I believe Lewisburg is somewhere. I guess I should look that up as local teams involved in that. And then the 3A wrestling final, I believe, is Saturday night over at Selins Grove. Selins Grove will host Shikellamy. Steve Williams will have the call here on News Radio 1070 of that one. Reminder, these are district matches, so you can't buy tickets at the door. You got to get online to get your tickets. So make sure you do that if you plan on heading over to Selins Grove High School on Saturday for that match. I think you'll remember the Braves knocked off the Seals last week in the dual meet, the regular season dual meet, to give the Braves second place in Division I. I think Central Mountain has wrapped up Division I of the Heartland Athletic Conference in wrestling undefeated. What else happened? Not so good news. It looks like Joel Embiid hurt his knee last night out of Golden State. He made his return in the game against the Warriors. Was watching a little bit while we were working last night, and he struggled really badly in the first half, and then somebody fell on him. He's supposed to have an MRI today. That doesn't sound particularly good for the next couple of weeks for the Sixers that hit the skids. And I think we all know how important Embiid's health is to, especially now without Harden, and how important Embiid's going to be to their playoff run. So as healthy as they can get the big man, that does wonders for their championship chances. But man, if you're paying any attention to the NBA right now, the Knicks are playing as well as anybody. You know, it's hard pressed to pick against the Knicks and the Celtics in the Eastern Conference. So that's going to wrap up the first segment here of the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 AM. We'll be back after a bit.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 AM WKOK, sponsored by Sunbury Motors in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia in Homel's Wharf. Visit the Quick Lane and the Service Center at Sunbury Motors for all your repair needs. We're back here in the Sunbury Motors studio here on the Steve Jones Show. Steve will be joining us shortly. He's still out at shoot around. They are at Rutgers today. Penn State is at Rutgers today. They will be here on News Radio 1070 AM. Pregame show at 8 p.m. Tip is at 8:30. You know, we spend a lot of time around here talking about, you know, news in college sports and NIL and you know, I guess for lack of a better term, stuff coming to a head. Florida State got dinged by the NCAA before Christmas, right after we got off the air yesterday. It sounds like they're looking into some Tennessee things. Some of the things the collective did. One involves, I'm not even going to try and pronounce the quarterback's name, but the kid that started the bowl game, the collective sent a private jet to bring him in from California, and that was essentially deemed to be an improper benefit right now, and I think that the NCAA is trying to decide what is, you know, how to handle this. And then more came today with the Tennessee Attorney General suing the NCAA, and I believe I saw before we went on the air that Virginia has joined it, that essentially not that they don't allow students to see, you know, each school's NIL, I guess for lack of a better term, capabilities and what they can offer and things of that nature. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that plays out. They're looking for, I believe they're looking for a temporary injunction, at least in from Tennessee's part, to keep from the University of Tennessee from being punished. The dreaded lack of institutional control was dropped in the statement from the NCAA. And, you know, I think most of us know that, you know, they're looking, you know, when they dropped it on SMU, they canceled football, I believe, for a year or two, you know, back in the 80s. I don't think that's any plan of the NCAA in this day and age. But, you know, this just goes back to they have to figure out a way to get NIL collective and exactly what their rules are and what they want to allow and what they can allow. And, you know, I'm fully on board with Steve's. They've kind of stuck their head in the sand and not really listened to anybody and hoped Congress would bail them out, and it keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and it doesn't look like Congress is going to bail them out anytime soon. So I think, you know, the new president of the NCAA is probably going to have to come up with some sort of solution to this. And pretty quickly, you know, we talked a little bit last week, I believe it was, with Adam Rittenberg and some of the things from ESPN and some of the things that he wrote about, you know, the coaches meeting and some of the suggestions from the coaches association. And one of the big lines in that one was if they listen to them or not. And that's, you know, I feel like that's something they're probably going to have to start to do, is listen to the guys with the ears on the ground and kind of that are involved in this, you know, in a day-to-day basis, and kind of know what's going on. I'm sure we talked about, you know, Matt Rule saying what the going rate for a transfer quarterback was back in December. Some of the stuff Ryan Day said last year and what it would take to retain a team right now. And you know, if you pay close attention to this stuff, I think you can tell that Ohio State has put some money into the Ohio State program this offseason with the amount of retentions that they had and some of the transfers that they picked up in the portal. It's an interesting conversation around college football, because if you're of a certain age, you know, there's a romanticism and an amateurism around college sports and around football that doesn't exist, and let's be honest, probably hasn't existed for 25 or 30 years, but it's way out in the open now, and I think that's kind of people's biggest problem with it is, you know, it was easier to turn the other way when it was cheating and you know, people were doing stuff under the table and, you know, we'd get caught once in a while, and, you know, I think people could handle that. But now when it's not cheating and it's kind of out in the open, I think people are, you know, college football is college football and college basketball are getting closer and closer to pro sports in that way. And I think people use college sports as kind of a buffer for their pro sports, and it worries people that it's getting closer and closer together. And it's going to be, you know, again, you know, this is something that the NCAA probably should have gotten ahead of probably 4 or 5 years ago, and letting the wild, wild west exist for the last 4 or 5 years has really, really caused some problems. And as we get further and further into this without any rules or even, I guess, recommendations, guidelines, the have and have nots are going to get bigger. You can talk about, you know, Power Five and non-Power Five, but there's a difference in spending in the top and the bottom of the SEC and the top of the bottom of the Big Ten. And you know, I asked Steve that question when we were talking about this, if he thought it would be two big conferences, and he doesn't think it's, and you know, these teams have to play somebody, I get that, but I don't know, you know, as some of the bottom of the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 can't compete with the money, how are they going to generate their own money to stay solvent, to stay in those conferences? Look at the University of Arizona, who lost slipped my mind, Jed Fish to Washington, and you know, their athletic director picked the new football coach but immediately got fired because they're so far in debt. I think they're $40 million in debt. They weren't happy with the contract extension that Coach Fish got, you know, just for the amount of money that the school was losing in athletics. And, you know, we'll see with the new TV deal with the expanded playoff when it comes. We'll see, you know, how much switching conferences helps. But, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the new teams in these conferences aren't getting their full money, I think, for at least 10 years, you know, until... And that's going to set some of these teams back a little bit. Now, can USC or UCLA, you know, Washington, Oregon, survive something like that? Probably, you know, that with enough donors and things of that nature. But you know, does Colorado and Arizona, smaller athletic budget schools, you know, smaller alumni bases, are they able to stay as a Power Five team with this difference in monetary contributions, I guess, to their football programs and things like that? It's something to keep an eye on over the next couple years in both sports. Going back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier, you know, it all bleeds into the other. It's like a circle. You know, if youth sports is failing, you know, that bleeds into college sports, will eventually bleed into pro sports. And all these problems, you know, coming to a head at the same time, you know, I hope in 4 or 5 years everything's in a better place. You know, you hope it would be. You hope all these problems are solvable and we're not having these same conversations. But, you know, I'm sure Steve had those thoughts 5 years ago when NIL started. You know, you think the NCAA is going to get in front of something, take care of something, and make sure that these rules are enforced, and they haven't really done that. And it's interesting that they're trying to, now punish Florida State and you know, give a show cause coach to their offensive coordinator for something that, you know, if you read the story, you know, putting him in contact with the Florida State Collective, it doesn't seem like he'd be the only one to have done that. Or, you know, I find it hard to believe that Tennessee is the only school that sent a private jet for somebody to bring them to campus across country. But it's who they have, I guess it's who they have evidence on and who they think they can punish to set an example of. You know, I talked a little bit about those lawsuits. I saw somebody say that, you know, one of the things they didn't mention was the state NIL laws, because the state NIL laws give the NCAA the right to enforce rules if they believe that it's beyond the scope of the NIL. You know, if it's too much money for something, I think would be the best way to put it. And if that, you know, if they're able to, you know, it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see if the NCAA is able to enforce these rules without fighting in court or getting help from Congress, or are we going to be in the wild, wild west for many years until somebody figures this out? It's an interesting time for college sports. I think, you know, I had this thought when we were talking about it during the games. I mean, you watch the games, it's, you know, if you look at it from the outside, that college sports is a beautiful guy or girl. You know, it looks great. You know, it seems like it's going real well, but, you know, a little closer, deeper dive into their personalities, and, you know, it's not going real well. There's some things that, you know, they probably need help with that is going to have to be solved before the ugliness on the inside gets to the outside and kind of affects play and affects fans' enjoyment of it. We'll take another break here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Sorry, it was grooving to a little Rush there. Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We are in the Sunbury Motors studio. We are sponsored by Sunbury Motors today. Sunbury Motors and Sunbury Motors Ford in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia and Hummel's Wharf. Once again, live in the Sunbury Motors studio in Sunbury. Again, Steve will be with us shortly. He is Penn State is out at Rutgers today. He's still at the shoot around. Nittany Lions go on the air. Steve and Dick at 8 o'clock here on News Radio 1070. Tip off set for 8:30 with Penn State out at Rutgers in Big Ten basketball. Some other news of the day: it broke last night that it sounds like that the Orioles were sold to a group. Group headed by the Argyle Corporation. So keep an eyeball on that. I know a lot of Oriole fans are not happy with the Angelos family and the spending on free agents and kind of what's gone on this offseason. I feel like the Orioles think that they might have been able to make some moves with some prospects to kind of solidify their spot in the AL East. Doesn't look like the sale's going to come to fruition anytime in the next couple months. It's kind of rumors and sources right now. It looks like, you know, it sounds like that maybe, you know, the sale is pending on, you know, the death of Peter Angelos, who, you know, John Angelos right now, his son is running the team, but Peter is still the majority owner. So I don't know. Obviously, if he's not the fronting face of the company, his health can't be the greatest right now. So I wonder if, you know, if he's not, you know, in the greatest shape, and that's why it needed to get done now. Big thing for the Orioles this offseason was renewing the lease for Camden Yards, and I believe at least for the next 15 years that they have a chance, you know, they will play at Camden Yards. I think there's an opt-out in there if they're not allowed to develop around the stadium. I believe they wanted to do kind of a food bar slash thing like they have around Wrigley Field and several other places down in Baltimore. Actually, always been one of my favorite places to catch a game. You know, took my daughter there for the first time, you know, many years, you know, I think she was 3 or 4 for her first game. You know, Citizens Bank's a nice place to watch a game now. I was never a big fan of those cookie-colored vet places, but I really enjoy Camden Yards. Actually, if I think about it, between the 90s and now, it might be the place I've seen the game the most. Other news that happened today, this broke while we've been on the air. It looks like the Seahawks have hired Mike McDonald as head coach, the Baltimore Ravens defensive coordinator. That excites me as a Seahawks fan. There were some rumors that it was going to be Mike Kafka, the former Northwestern quarterback and current New York Giants offensive coordinator. Seahawks are one of the teams that Ben Johnson told that he wasn't going to be a head coach, along with the Commanders, that they were going to, that he was going to stay with the Lions. You know, I say what you will about the Ravens and their play this week. You know, the defense didn't go anywhere this week. They struggled a little bit early on, I think, but all 17 of those points came in the early part of the first half, about midway through the second quarter, and the Chiefs' offense really didn't get much against that Ravens defense. And, you know, that's if you pay attention to some of these guys that watch film on ESPN and for the NFL Network, you know, they can all point out about how good of a defensive coordinator Mike McDonald is for the Ravens and the variety of stuff that he does. My quick thought on it is I like the hire. It's going to be interesting to see in Seattle how this works. It sounds like John Schneider is in charge. You know, he and Pete Carroll kind of split personnel duties and things like that. So this will be kind of John Schneider's first real time in Seattle that he's in charge of everything personnel wise. And we'll see what McDonald can do. You know, I don't think the problem last year was, you know, it wasn't really the offense. It's been the defense the last couple of years, which is surprising to say for a Pete Carroll coach team. But they've always seemed to have struggled on one level of offense. One year it is, you know, they can't get a pass rush in, or the next year, you know, they've been absolutely awful stopping the run. You know, there's some pieces out there. You know, but the NFC West, you know, between the 49ers, and I really like what you know. I don't want to mispronounce her name. I believe it's Rodrigue, but Jordan Rodrigue, who used to be the CDT's Nittany Lions writer and I believe a Carolina Panthers beat writer, did a deep dive several times this season on some of the things that Sean McVay did out at Los Angeles, kind of to revamp his approach, revamp his, you know, his coaching style, you know, everything that had to do after that awful, you know, that less than stellar season that they had last season. And, you know, he was, if you read some of that stuff, he was close to resigning and stepping down and you know, just use that time to retool himself. And it's something that, you know, I think, you know, teams, people, you know, probably should do more of. It's just, you know, take a general census of your life and figure out what's not working and what is, and what changes you kind of have to make to get the things that aren't working to work. And like I said, they did a deep dive on The Athletic from Jordan Rodrigue on it was podcasts and several long form stories that were quite interesting on how the Rams have revamped themselves going into the season, during this season, and kind of what Sean McVay learned from doing all that. And they're a team, you know, right now that, you know, between the Rams, the 49ers, you know, a lot of people talk about the AFC West, but the NFC West is pretty tough, and it's going to be kind of hard sledding for the Seahawks right now to get into that mix, I think two teams that are better than they are. And, you know, we'll see how Kyler Murray, you know, what they do with Kyler Murray and Jonathan Gannon and with Arizona, because once Kyler Murray got in there, you know, you kind of saw what the Cardinals were capable of in that win over the Eagles, you know, the way they played in that second half, and they could, you know, with some improvements, be one of the better teams in the NFC next year as well. So that's something to keep an eye on. Again, Mike McDonald hired in Seattle. Now it's going to be interesting to see what the Ravens do. Their secondary coach, I believe, is Denard Walker, and he's gotten some looks from other teams. That seems like who might get the defensive coordinator position in Baltimore. And, you know, as people watch that game on Sunday, it wasn't really the defense that was the issue for Baltimore. It was, you know, I'm not even really willing to put it all in Lamar Jackson either. There was it was kind of an iffy game plan from Todd Monken and the Ravens. It was a team that was able to run the ball at times. You know, they don't have a star running back, but between Lamar Jackson and Gus Edwards and some of the Justice Hill and I believe they picked up Davin Cook as well. You know, between those three guys, they were able to generate a real good running game and kind of keep teams honest, and they just didn't run the ball at all against the Chiefs. And you know, one dimensional is easy to stop, you know, unless you're a team that does that one dimension so well that you know, it you can't stop it. But as we get in higher levels of football, that's harder and harder to do. And if you're one dimensional, I think the Chiefs were kind of able to pin back Lamar's ears and play coverage on the backside and get to the quarterback and kind of throw some different things at him. And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Steve Spagnuolo. You know, if you look a little deeper into the numbers of that Ravens team, it's one of the best regular season teams, you know, in the last in many years in the NFL, and you know, and Steve Spagnuolo's shut them down. Steve Spagnuolo's the defensive coordinator that came up the plan, came up with a plan to stop the undefeated Patriots when the Giants won. So it's one of those deals where, you know, we talked about Arthur Smith yesterday with Neil, with hello.
It's all personnel, okay? I mean, you can foul up good personnel, but when you have great personnel, you can make plays. The bottom line is that Lamar Jackson is a superior runner and as dynamic a running quarterback as there is. Number two, he has really improved as a passer, but he's still a tier two quarterback. Okay? Because... which game this year were the Ravens behind by 8 points or more they came back to win?
I'm guessing none.
That's right, zero. Okay, zero. And you see this all the time. I mean, Brock Purdy has more of those this year than Lamar Jackson had this year. They did a good job of containing him within the pocket. They did a good job of luring him in with cover three. What does cover three make you think you can do?
Throw deep.
Yep. And what's it designed to stop?
Throwing deep.
Yep. So, I mean, you look at what he has done in his career, but he's now 2-4 in the playoffs. Okay, that's an issue because when you're in the playoffs, you're playing against the better teams, the better defenses. And he has struggled a bit with that. And he's still young. I mean, you're still talking about a young quarterback. But he's not one of the – he may be the league MVP, but he's not one of the top five quarterbacks in the league. He just isn't. I mean, it's just I'm not trying to be cruel or anything. That's not what I'm trying to do here. Just trying to be realistic.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WK.